we are Glow Mountain Bike. We are a podcast with a focus on recreational women's mountain biking. Our goal is to create a community with focus on being uplifting and encouraging to one another. We all ride for different reasons. Some ride to be outdoors in nature, some for mental or physical health. Others are professional athletes. Some like to race for fun or not at all, and many of us are aspiring to become professional leisure athletes. And all of us like to have fun playing on bikes. Whatever your reason for riding, this is a place for you.
Hi, I'm Julie.
I'm Janet.
And I'm Anna.
It is November 12th, 2022, and we're coming to you from nowhere other than Anna's basement. Woo-hoo! We are so excited. We have one of our very own Glow Gals with us today, Devin Tracy.
Yay!
And for those of you that don't know, at the start of this episode, you always hear that amazing jingle. This was created by Devin, and that is who you're listening to.
Give us a little glow jingle, will you?
Glow. Glow, 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 glow.
Yeah.
So nice.
You are so talented.
Yeah.
She's amazing. And we're so happy to have you here. And for those of you who don't know, Devin is our local expert in bike packing. So that's going to be our topic today. We're going to learn all about bike packing. But before we do that, let's hear about where everybody's been riding.
Yeah.
Julie's got some news.
Okay. So just came in fresh off, returned from Rome Fest Bike Festival, Women's Mountain Bike Festival in Sedona, Arizona.
Ew!
Woo. Or as I like to call it, Shredona.
Shredona. Yeah.
10 out of 10. It? 10 out of 10. I can't even begin to express the connections that were made, the good times that were had, and the incredible riding and views. Although when we first got there, it was snowing, it was sleeting, and it was raining. And it was colder in Sedona, Arizona than it was in Vermont. So that was pretty rude.
But all's well that ends well.
You know what? It gave us this incredible day to do all the touristy things and shopping that we would have never done. So
there you go.
It worked out really well.
Nice.
It's a cool little town, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Just pretty out there too.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Did you have one trail that you just like,
gosh,
need to ride this again?
We have talked about this time and again. I traveled with four or three other of my friends, and we keep asking like, okay, what was your favorite ride? What was your favorite trail? And it's so hard because they were all so fun. But I would have to say, like, I'm really stoked to go back to High in the Hogs, the Hogs Trail. Very technical trail. I had to walk a few features, but I rode some that were pretty amazing. For those that don't know, Sedona is not a beginner-friendly area.
No, it's not.
It is all chunk everywhere. Even the green trails have a ton of chunk on them. But that's my favorite style of riding is chunky technical trails. And then you've got the slick rock. And so High in the Hogs, I think, was my favorite. But Ground Control was amazing. Slim Shady was amazing. We did not do Highline this year. It is on my vision and goals for future years. And then the last ride that we did out there, just Kelly Miltner and I, we did Chuck Wagon.
Oh, yeah.
And we made it a true adventure. We set out. Our friends had to return their bikes. They went to Devil's Bridge, which is like a super cool thing. We did that last year.
Yeah.
They went out and hiked that. So they dropped us off at the Chuck Wagon Trail. And it's literally a circle.
Yeah.
Like, you can't mess it up.
Well,
you just go in a go in a circle.
Julie, you went right.
It was supposed to be a 5 mile loop.
Oh yeah, 5 miles.
A 5 mile easy last day, shake out the legs. We just about doubled it.
You really got lost.
And we kept passing this family, and I'm like, I swear this is the last time you're gonna see us. He's like, yeah, right. Until we see you next time.
Were you just like off the trail? Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
But which it worked out perfectly because our favorite section, it's actually out on Mezcal, which is a different trail that we did last year, but we really just didn't have a lot of life left in our legs.
Yeah.
So we intentionally chose this 5 mile route, but we didn't know that if we had stuck to that route, we wouldn't have gotten to our favorite section out on this prior loop that we did last year.
Okay.
So it's just got this awesome slick rock that, you know, when you get that aha moment, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it. I'm climbing it. I'm going to make it. And then this year, it was like, Like, it wasn't even a thing. Like, so, like, also,
wow, we're already at the top.
Also, having that realization of how far our skills have come over past year and the technical abilities, where last year that was like the, oh my gosh, I just rode up it.
Yeah.
And this year, I was like,
I'm already there.
Yeah. But, like, that was beautiful. Oh, wow. Okay. But, like, I'm going to take the A line up this route before we did the C line.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah, that is nice when you can do stuff like that.
We're so glad you had such a good time.
It was incredible. Yeah. Put it on your list.
Yeah, right. Sedona is awesome.
Now, what about you, Janet? Where have you been riding?
I did a really nice glow ride in Trescott for my birthday, and that was just awesome. There were like eight of us, and Devin was there. We had a great pace, and Trescott's really nice, and they've been blowing some of the trails.
Yeah, we ran into the guys at the parking lot.
Yeah. Perfect we get timing. Back at like 7:38. We get
they
back at, and they had blowers on their like front hub or by their front shock, and they're going out there.
It's like basically an e-bike.
But so that was that.
Do you know the guys have been blowing Boston Lot with a Rokon?
Yes.
Yes.
With the blower by the front.
I thought it was Brendan or someone out there just walking with the blower one day.
They're doing both.
We were riding, and I'm like, do you guys smell gas? And I was riding with Andy Jones, and he's like, it's true. It's two strokes. Somebody must be using a chainsaw. I'm like, how can you tell it's two strokes?
Oh, my God.
Like, he's so mechanical, right? It was kind of funny. And sure enough, like, just a little ways further up, like, oh, I can hear the blowers. So
somebody. That's great.
And then I rode Mount Peg, and I was not having a good day. And Mount Peg is a lot of climbing. Oh my God. I asked you, and you had just done Tunnel Ridge, I think, and you're like,
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you would have been fine with me at Mount Peg. But I just made it one of those rides where I'm going to just practice my skills, go slow, practice my skills, and get out of my mind. I have no legs.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
And then, Bila, we did Tech Tuesday on the windy day where we were talking about trees coming down. When we finished, Jerry Halstead, who we go with Tech Tuesday, goes, yeah, this guy said he got hit by a tree that came down in Bila.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. Awful. Did you see that huge tree near Raillet's that came down?
I heard it was huge.
Huge. It's worth getting off your bike and going looking at this thing. Otherwise, you wouldn't even know. You just ride past it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard it took quite a bit of work to get that cleared out.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you to Chris Schweitzer.
Yeah.
I believe he had a big chainsaw that he walked up there.
Oh, God. Wow.
And it didn't go through all the way through the trunk.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't see that.
I was in Raillet.
Wild.
Wow. And then how about you, Anna?
Let's see. Well, I finally did Tunnel Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really, really fun.
it's climbing, isn't it?
A lot of climbing, 3,000 feet.
But a lot of berms.
A lot of berms. I called the ride Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire. Because my riding buddies assured me that this the last, like, you climb up 6 miles, about, I don't know, a little over 2,000 feet, and then there's an 800-foot descent, which is amazing, but then you turn around, you climb back up it, and my riding buddies are like, oh, but like it's one of those like beautifully built trails, like you barely feel the climb, it's amazing. And as I'm riding down, I'm like, this feels like it's gonna not be an easy climb back up. And sure enough, like halfway back up, I'm like, I am dying. I'm done. My legs started cramping. Yeah. I'm like grabbing trees to take a rest. And so when we finally, and I'm there's another gal who's riding, and her and I are both like, oh, we're behind the pack here. The rest of them, you know, they're way up there. They're waiting for us. So when we finally get to the summit, I'm like, Liar, Liar, Pants on Fire. That was not an easy climb. What were you thinking? And they're like, well, we just wanted to ride it. So
yeah, those Swiss tracks, themselves. You got to power up them, and then you get a little breather, then power up.
Yeah, it was so good though. It was just so fun, and what well built trails. It was just really something different, which was really great.
Cool.
And I've been riding in B Lot a few times and Hurricane a few times, and they blew leaves on Hurricane too, so it's like, oh, so nice right now.
What about you, Devin? Where have you been riding?
Well, let's see. Also, Trescott Glow Ride. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was
the weather,
fun.
The moon was out. It was right after that.
And it was
lunar
warm.
Eclipse. It was warm. Yeah. We were wearing tank tops and shorts, some of us.
Wow. Yep.
And then Tunnel Ridge was great.
Yes.
I was just
Devin
singing
was
the mantra.
The liars.
No, I hadn't done that. I had not done that downhill.
That's right. That's
but
right.
I was singing the mantra in my head. Low, look, link,
oh,
lean.
Nice. Oh, yeah, yeah,
every girl. Corner. And I could tell I was getting faster and faster.
Wow. Nice.
I mean, I'm fairly new mountain biker, yeah. and it just really built the confidence. It was like doing, what's the word, reps?
When you do repetitions,
No, what is it when you stop and go back? No, when you stop and go back. I'm sessioning, but you don't have to actually get off your bike.
Yes, so totally.
I went back yesterday because I wanted to do more sessioning and brought the dog, and it was just beautiful.
Yeah, you did a lot of miles.
Yeah, old gents, if those folks that are local, I mean, it is just really, it really is a well-built trail, and there is much less climbing. I would say like a quarter of the climbing.
Yeah, I like the sounds of that.
Yeah. Julie and I are going to hit that one up next time.
Yes.
But those are such fun trails.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, as you know, Devin brings up the cornering low, low, lean. We thought we'd continue on with our skills chatting, and something we haven't talked specifically about with cornering is braking. So, well, I mean, we always talk about braking, right? Because one of our main things that we say, especially with corners, is that you have to control your speed coming in.
Yeah.
But we haven't really talked about how you actually do that.
Right.
So, like, Devin, you're a relatively new mountain biker. Do you think about what you're doing with your brakes, or you just think about your speed control, or walk us through?
I'm doing the 3-2-1.
Oh, you are.
It's called 2-1-none. 2-1-none. Thank you.
I always say 3-2-1.
Yeah. 2-1-none and low look lean. Okay. That's real. I'm just trying to slow down enough so that I don't feel out of control and the bike goes out in front of me.
Yep. Cool. What about you, Julie?
Yeah, I am more of like a feathering person, so really feeling the pressure of how much I'm applying the brakes. I use mostly both of my front and my back brakes, but there are times that like I only am using my back brake, or in some super technical times, I'm only using my front brake. Okay. So it really depends on the terrain that I'm on.
Sure.
But I really do practice it is never a jolt. It is always a feather
modulation
into it. So
cool.
Yeah, I love my brakes.
I'm not as good with my brakes. Like I don't like I use them both together. I feather them together. So like the 2-1-none, I have to talk to myself and yell
because
it's tough to do it. I mean, it's not natural. It's not natural for me.
No.
So I'm usually like, when I go into the turn, I definitely want to go in slow. So it's the 2, and I slow myself down, because if I don't, then I'm braking the whole turn. So I got to go slow,
right?
And then I kind of release them both at the same time.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about with 2-1-none, it's I think it's a Live Ladies All Ride thing.
Yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. I learned it from Erica at Ladies All Ride, but I think they all teach it. So it's basically, as you're coming into the corner, you're pulling 2, so you're pulling your right and your left. And first of all, we should probably talk about that, you know, your brakes. One is for your rear and one is for your front.
Yeah.
And you should only have, as long as you have disc brakes, you should only have one finger on your brake lever. And that finger should be near the end of your brake lever, not in the middle, to give you the best, the best pull, the least amount of effort. So making sure your cockpit is set up sometimes can really help your braking.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure those things are all set. But your right is your rear, right?
In the U.S.
In the U.S. It's different in the
they
U.K.
They do it opposite in the U.K. Stop.
U.K. Yeah. Like Australia, New Zealand.
No. Why? Yeah. I know.
So
be careful if you travel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically 2-1-none is modulating or feathering or controlling those brakes, slowing down as you're coming into the corner, and then letting go of your left brake. So letting go of your front tire so you can get lots of good traction with that front tire until you're at a point in the corner where you feel comfortable letting it all go, hopefully at the apex or maybe even slightly before, so that you can let it all go and scooch right out of there.
Yeah.
In a perfect world.
In a perfect world.
In a perfect world.
Not all trails are created equal.
Yeah. And it's or so corners. Much of it, so much of it depends on how steep it is,
the banking,
how tight it is,
how flat,
what kind of, what obstacles are in your way, if it's tacky loam or if it's loose shale, like so many things make a difference. But just, that's one thing that you can think of. And I think most of us, when we're learning how to brake that way, have to say it out loud. So there's a lot of 2-1-none, 2-1-none, as we're going down Tunnel Ridge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You are not alone, Devin.
Okay, good.
Yeah. yeah. Because there's so many other things. You're like, he said, look, yeah. look, lean, two, right. one, none, all at the same
Where's
time.
Where's my butt? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, am I leaning in or am I leaning out? But it was fun because at the bottom of Tunnel Ridge 2, Stacia also said, I think I get it. Like, she for the first time, I felt like her leaning was, awesome. She was going the right way. And those trails, when you can, just session for 6 miles of downhill.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can try different things, right, and practice with it.
One thing you said, Anna, that I think is nice to circle back to is you talked about the cockpit setup and, like, reaching for your brakes. And a lot of the things that I think I get nerdy out about is making sure I'm not reaching too far for my brakes. And
yes, knowing me too.
That, like, we all have different size hands and everything like that. And you can move your brakes closer to you or more further away, depending on everything. You can even swap where your dropper post lever is and where your brakes are, depending on if you're reaching too far for that.
Yeah.
That comfort level, I think, is so important to having an enjoyable ride and not always having to, like, shake your hands out. If you're shaking and your hands are getting tired, that's probably because your cockpit isn't set up right.
Yeah, I agree.
That's such a good point.
Not fun. Yeah.
I even had a rental shop change where they had the brake levers and where the dropper was, because I just couldn't reach it.
Exactly.
So make sure you get it set up.
Yeah, you want where it's comfortable for you. And, you know, if you're on a ride like this, it's really easy to take out your multi-tool and you can change it a few degrees in either direction and just see how it feels.
Yeah, makes a big difference.
And maybe it'll feel better, maybe it'll feel worse, but just play around with it. Like, those are easy trailside things to do.
And even the lever that you're actually pulling, that can be adjusted how far out or how far in.
Oh, yeah, I do that a lot.
Too. So there's so many little micro adjustments that can make your ride so much more enjoyable. And feel more comfortable.
And you know, you want to be, you know, we talk about feathering or modulation, it's so hard to describe, but you want to make sure your brakes are always being applied gradually and consistently.
Yeah. Yep.
You really want to try to avoid the like the on and off thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's really gentle, small movements. And I have this great drill that we sometimes do when we're teaching that kind of helps people visualize and really feel what it's like to modulate your brakes. So I call it the endo game.
This does not sound like fun.
It is. I can attest to this. I've been in Anna's workshops.
I don't want to do endos and practice my brakes. But really, you're off your bike. Your bike is beside you. You're being careful with your pedals so that's not going to ram your
shin.
Ram into your shin. So your bike's kind of to the side of you. And you want to pull on your front brake. And then you're going to push your bike forward. And what's going to happen is your back tire is going to come up, right?
Yeah.
And then the endo game, the trick, is to then start modulating your front brake so that you can walk your bike with your tire staying up.
It's
like a bike handstand almost.
It's like a bike handstand. Totally. Right. And it's amazing for folks to try this and to realize how little pressure they need and how much of a difference it makes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? So, if you suddenly grab the brake really hard, your tire's just going to drop.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you let it go, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
So you have to just find that and just like little micro adjustments. So, and figuring out, like, just practice that and just kind of, like, walk around the trailhead doing your little endos, like, oh, yeah, look at, it's so, you know, light. And it's amazing how much we let go way too much.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how much better you get if you actually practice this.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, I mean, you did it, Devin. What'd you think?
Oh, I thought it was a blast.
Yeah. It's challenging, though, right?
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
But it does help you understand the micro movements.
Cool.
Yeah. Right. One thing that we should mention, I mean, it is the index finger that's on the brake.
Yes.
And always have it there. Once I had taken a lesson from this lady, Shelley Lutz in Rutland, and I was a new biker, and I posted a picture, and I was climbing, and I did not have my hand on my finger on the brake, and she pointed that out.
Good.
But climbing, you still need to have that index finger on the brake, because sometimes you can't make it, so you just grab your brakes and you can get off.
My brakes saved me so much.
Oh, climbing.
Right. Climbing.
Yeah. You think they're just for descending, but they're not.
Yeah,
I think before you learn how to do that, you'll end up putting your foot down on a climb and your bike falling on top of you.
Exactly.
And then when you realize, if I was covering my brakes and when I put my foot down, my bike just stays where it was.
Yep.
Then you're like, oh.
Yeah. Sometimes then you can grab a tree and keep going.
You can.
Fancy.
You can.
Or do a dab.
Oh, yeah. We can get dabalicious.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So one more thing to add to your cornering. So we've got low, look, lean, line choice, pump, and now break. And by the way, that's all happening together.
It's easy.
You know how we talk about, you're going to go do Tunnel Ridge. Like, on the first 50 berms, just think about your braking.
Yeah, one thing at a time.
One thing at a time.
Yeah, that's right.
At a time. All right, cool. So, enough about corners for now. Let's talk about bike packing.
Yeah.
Devin, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm so happy to be here.
When we first met Devin as a GLOW member, we're like, did you meet Devin? She's like ridden across the country, and she goes on all these really long bike rides and does all this really cool stuff. We're like, she wants to ride with us.
Yeah. 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 Oh, please.
Which is really cool. So can you start with just telling us what bike packing even is?
Sure. So simply put, bike packing, you can think of it as backpacking, but you have a bike. And this has been around for decades. Actually, it just hasn't always been called bike packing. Uh-huh. Historically, you might have heard it called bike touring. And another way to think of it as you're biking, you're sleeping somewhere, and then you're going to bike again the next day. And maybe it's just a one-nighter. Maybe it's a weekend trip. Maybe it's a year. I've met folks that have biked around the world, day after day after day. And if you just, when I biked across the country, people ask me, how did you do that? And it's like, I just went on a bike ride every day, and I happened to be going in the same direction, and all of a sudden I was in Canada. So you just break it down to the day by day.
Yeah. Does it count if you bike and then go to an Airbnb?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Julie, we can do it.
I can do it.
I'm glad you asked that, Janet, because there's so many flavors of bike packing.
Yes.
It totally counts.
Good.
So you could do the hotel.
Yes.
You could do hut to hut.
Yeah.
You could do supported trip where, you're carrying maybe some snacks and a layer, and you've got a support vehicle.
Yeah.
Or you could go unsupported. And so there's no right or wrong way to bike pack. And I actually think that is a great way to get into it.
Yep.
Right.
So there's no bike packing police.
There's no bike packing police.
You can do it however you want it.
Right. And you can go as slow. You can do, 10 miles a day. You can do 100 miles a day. You could race it. There's bike packing races. Or you could just go for the journey.
Yeah.
And the other distinction is you could go, solo. You could go with a group. You could bring your pets and your kids. I've seen folks bringing trailers for their dog. There's a guy who biked around the world with a cat on his shoulder.
Oh, my God.
They wrote a book about it. I got it at the library. Yeah. Look him up on Instagram.
Okay.
He built a little umbrella for the cat, So there's really no wrong or right way to do it, but
that's amazing.
Yeah.
All of these modes, it's just a simple way of traveling, and that's why I like it. It's very meditative. You notice the things that you wouldn't notice when you're going on the same route every weekend, and it's just rewarding traveling by your own power, and amazing how far you can get in a short time.
And I'm thinking you're not just talking miles about how far you can get.
Right.
Like, this must be really good for your mental health
and
for
your
confidence and for just living the good life.
Right. It's very cleansing. You notice, for example, when we were in Iceland, there's really nothing, you're going for an hour or two and there's really not much stimulation, and then there's a sign and it's actually pointing in the other direction, but it's like, I want to see what that sign says, because there's nothing to do but ride and smile. So
and look at lava rocks.
And you don't go to the places that all the tourists go, because you have seen all the other waterfalls that the cars sped right by. So you just avoid the tourist traps, which I like.
That's great.
So tell us some of the trips you've been on. You've mentioned cross country, you mentioned Iceland, tell us more.
So thinking about coming to this podcast, I had no idea. I have done probably about 20 trips.
That's
probably incredible. Started 10 years ago. So
in
I typically
years,
like to
trips.
Do one big trip a year.
Yeah.
My brother and I have done several together.
Yeah.
My now husband and I have done several together. So my first bike packing trip, which was supported, was the CNO Canal, which connects Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. And that was just a spring break trip. I think I was a sophomore in college, and it was supported. And we did 100 miles in a week. Oh, and cool. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah. And it was flat. So, really great introduction.
Camping.
Yes.
Yeah, bringing all camping. Your stuff.
Yep.
Did you say supported or unsupported?
Supported. So, okay. We had a van.
Cars. Okay.
And then several years later, I went back to do the entire trip unsupported. Oh. And that was my first unsupported trip. But nice. I had the confidence from having done part of it with a support vehicle.
That's cool. They have supported ones. I like that to start out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've also done the hot springs loop in Idaho. That's incredible because every night you get hot springs. You can plan the route that way. That was also supported, and that was on half squish mountain bikes.
Okay.
And then I've also done the Olympic Peninsula. That was great. Also hot springs on the route. There's a theme. Iceland.
Now, are these unsupported or supported?
A mixture.
Okay.
So hot springs, Idaho was supported. Olympic Peninsula was unsupported. California coast, my brother and I did that.
Wow.
That was unsupported. San Juan Huts, that was partially supported because it was hut to hut. That was my honeymoon.
We just did this year. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a mixture.
Yeah. Oh, these sound so cool.
Now, you mentioned you're on half squish. So, which different bikes for different trips, I'm assuming?
So, I would say go with a theme, run with what you brung. But it really depends on, in terms of, how do you actually go do this? I would start with thinking about the route, and that will dictate the type of bike and the type of gear and the type of training.
Yeah.
So, it really depends on where you want to go, but any bike can be a bike packing bike.
Yeah.
This, when my first unsupported on the CNO, all I had was my road bike from biking across the country on pavement.
Wow.
And the bike shop said, you'll never make it doing this bike. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to try it anyway. Didn't get a flat tire.
I love it.
Yeah. And I put a bike rack on the back and I put one of those milk cartons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Totally.
And I had a big backpack,
which
then I got tired of wearing, so I put it in the milk carton.
Totally, sure.
Which was fine, and then on any uphill, the bike was so back heavy, I would do a wheelie. But it worked, and we got there, and it was fine.
You got
so you don't have to spend a lot of money on getting a new bike or getting a bunch of gear. Run with what you brung, and I can share with you kind of the evolution of bike set I've had as well.
I'm getting so excited just because you can see so much. Like, it's a great way to see the country.
It really is.
Yeah.
And meet the locals, because that's a big part of it too.
Yeah.
And getting the tips and
just
building in that buffer along the way, just so that if a local says, oh, you should really check out this spot, or you should, stay here, which maybe it was sooner than you were planning to stop, but it gives you that, extra bonus of
unexpected pleasure.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's so okay. So I'm hearing, make a plan, but be willing to change it.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. So, tell us about your evolution of bikes and equipment.
Yeah. Sure. So I'm going to back up one step to the route, because the bikes and equipment does depend on type of pavement. If are you going mostly pavement, are you going mostly gravel, are you going mostly single track, how much elevation change is there, how remote is it, because that's going to dictate how much stuff you need to bring. If you're going to have amenities along the way, you're not going to have amenities. And then there's a website called bikepacking.com, which I encourage folks to go to, and they have a plethora of routes you can just borrow.
Oh, wow.
And they have a scale, a ranking from 1 to 10 of
that
difficulty.
That sounds really cool.
Which,
give me the one.
Bikepacking.com.
Bikepacking.com.
Oh, bikepacking.
Bikepacking.
And the ones.
Yeah. Right. And they also have this journal, which I have here on the table, and it just has a ton of fun pictures and stories from all around the world.
Ooh, I'm going to look at that.
They probably have hundreds of routes.
Yeah.
There's one local, the Green Mountain Gravel Growler, which I've done, and it goes to breweries every day.
Oh my gosh, sign me up. Doing it! The critical QBR guy.
The critical thing is timing it so that, when Danny and I did it, we were passing the breweries at 9 in the morning. We're like, shoot, they're not open yet.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to time it, but a great route. Great route.
Are there Airbnbs right next to them?
Yes, exactly. So the route is a big piece of it. And then deciding if you're going to camp, if you're going to go to the hotel, because that's going to dictate. There's also a website called warmshowers.org.
Oh.
And it's a network all around the world of bike packers that are willing to host.
Yeah.
And so that you don't have to necessarily pay.
Yeah.
You pay it forward by hosting other riders.
Yeah.
And we've met a lot of awesome cyclists. We hosted a couple that was biking from the tip of Alaska to Ushuaia. Is that how you say it? In the tip of South America.
Oh my word.
Wow. And I guess they had already done that because we were not on that route. But we learned a lot from them.
Wow.
And so that's a really good way to meet people, but also to help plan your route and, you know, not necessarily bring your whole kitchen sink with you. So then that leads to the bike. And so my evolution was starting with a road bike that I had. When I did the Iceland trip, I needed something a little more hefty.
Yeah.
And so I got a steel gravel bike. And that
steel is real.
Steel is real. And it's reliable. Like
yeah.
And I was nervous about Iceland because it's remote. It's a different country I'd never been to. And I didn't want to break my bike and then be stuck in the middle of nowhere. So
the big appeal to like all the Surleys and stuff like that is because like there's not going to be maintenance issues
on them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So was a Surly. That was a Surly cross check. And I think it had 45 millimeter tires.
See, I know things.
Yes.
You do know things.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
She's legit, man.
That's the only thing I know.
And then one of the other trips I forgot to mention was the Great Divide Trail.
Oh,
so Danny and I decided to do that during COVID when everything was shut down. And so I built a bike. I used the opportunity when we were just home. And I built a bike from scratch, like you're doing, Anna. And this was a fully rigid mountain bike, though, because it was 29 plus tires. I think it was 3-inch tires.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I just used the opportunity to learn. I put a dynamo in the hub so that I would have power along the way.
Yeah.
You charge your phone and navigation devices.
Wow.
And it automatically powered the light. So that was really helpful.
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
So that was kind of the next evolution. And that was also a Surly steel Krampus. And that was great. But I did get jealous of all the people with carbon gravel bikes on that route. And there's a bike called the Salsa Cutthroat, which was specifically built for the Great Divide.
Oh, wow.
And it has a carving in the frame of the route. So I ended up getting that.
Wow.
And that's what I use now. But it's a gravel bike, but it has the exact same geometry of a mountain bike.
Oh, really?
So I like the sounds of that bike.
It's really great. I had mountain bike tires on it until just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that's a really good option. And then you can also use Full Squish, which we used on the San Juan Huts trip. That was full mountain biking.
Yep.
There's fat bike, gravel, I mean, bike packing routes out there. Have not done that yet. But, you know, you can use any bike and pick the route, tailor the route towards the bike you have.
Work
backwards that way.
Right.
Yeah. Good thinking.
But, you know, the main thing is that you're comfortable because you're going to be in the saddle for a while. And some bikes, I should also mention, are designed specifically to carry the load.
Right.
Almost like a motorcycle. And especially the Surleys, they actually feel better with gear.
Oh.
And it almost feels like a horse. And you can let go of your handlebars and just go.
Wow.
And it's just really stable.
Okay, but I'm not letting go of my
handlebars. No.
Although, when we were coming off the tunnel ridge and we were going down the road, I was behind Devin. And we're just on our Full Squish mountain bikes. And Devin's like stretching. Her arms are above her head. Mm-hmm. She's like flying down this hill. I'm like, I'm so not doing this.
Yeah.
All I could see was like smack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were just like, I need like stretch out. And like
a little yoga.
It did look really nice. But it was terrifying to be behind her.
Yes. I did miss the turn for.
And then she missed the turn. Yeah, I had to bob by her. I'm like, I can't watch this. Anyways, keep going.
So, I mean, that's really wrong what you brung for the bike.
Yeah.
Which then dictates the gear if we want to move into that piece.
Yeah.
And so I do have a show and tell.
Yay.
Yeah. So we'll try to describe this as a group to the listeners. But again, the internet will make you think you need to buy all of these things. And you really don't.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, use the milk crate.
Yeah.
I've seen cat litter boxes, those hard shell ones.
Oh, yeah,
snap those onto their bike. You can use a backpack, not necessarily the most comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm not doing that again. Remember a butternut?
Yeah, that was so hard.
We rode with our backpacks up. It was, you know, going up wasn't bad. Coming down was terrifying.
Yes, I agree.
You can't move your head up.
The terrifying. Helmet smushes in.
Yes, that was the scary part.
So, yeah, not ideal.
Yeah.
The traditional bike touring setup for the last several decades was panniers.
Yes. Yep.
Which is just a fancy way to say, you know, like a big
bag on the front.
Bag on the front. So I had, when we were in Iceland in particular, a front bike rack to balance out the back bike rack.
Oh,
and so two in the front, two in the back.
Yep.
Nice. That's a great, easy setup because you can just dump stuff in. But then you tend to bring more stuff than you need because there's just so much room.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a little bit trickier to find things when there's only four compartments and you're packing for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right. So it's handy, really convenient. They're waterproof.
Oh,
you can snap them off. You can put them on as a backpack if you need to run to the store. But not necessarily aerodynamic. And that's kind of takes me to the more modern bike packing setup, which I've now graduated to. But...
We're excited to see this.
Yeah, so I counted up, I think there's about 10 bags that I've had on my bike.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like the concept of bike packing bags because you don't need racks.
Yeah,
and you use the bike frame as your rack.
Yeah.
And it's just really streamlined, you save a lot of weight, and you can fit a lot of stuff. So the first one I just happened to pull out of the box here is your kind of water bottle. What is this called, Janet? Do you remember?
It's like the insulated water bottle thing.
Yeah, it's an insulated water bottle thing that you snap onto your handlebars, and it's great for water. It can be great for bear spray. However, I do have to tell a side story.
Oh, let's hear it.
I used to always put bear spray in this.
Yeah. Because it's easy to get to.
It's easy to get to. It's right there.
Yep.
But there was a guy racing the Great Divide this year. Apparently, bear spray can randomly explode sometimes.
What?
It randomly exploded, sent him flying off his bike. He broke several ribs and had to get helicoptered out.
Oh, God.
So, wait, what do you mean bear spray can randomly explode?
I think this is very uncommon.
Well, it was hitting.
Maybe it was hitting or the pressure. I don't know what it was.
He didn't have it on tight.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
So from now on, I carry the bear spray in a fanny pack. Pointing backwards.
So don't go behind her.
Right behind me.
It's going to blow your butt off.
Yeah.
If you just need a little extra speed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so, that's a cool bag.
Yeah. Okay. And then it has pouches on the outside for snacks.
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever.
So this is great. Yeah. Cool.
You and I have those.
Yeah. Use them in the winter for our water bottles.
Yeah.
So and the next. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
So the next is a twofer. So this goes on your fork. And this is called a cradle.
Oh,
and they make carbon fiber ones, but this is just a plastic salsa. And then you can see where the bolts would go on to the brazons on your fork. So that's another thing. If your fork doesn't have brazons, you're not going to be able to easily snap
those back. Those are the little screws, right?
Yeah. Brazons. Exactly. Okay, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Although I have seen folks use hose clamps from the hardware store and make DIY cradle. And you can just use a normal dry bag. This is a specific dry bag for your fork. And the voile strap goes through this hoop.
Oh, the voile strap.
This is waterproof. That's key.
Oh, get it.
And so I typically put my sleeping pad in here and pillow and socks. You figure out which bags you put things. Weight-wise.
So do you have one of those on each side?
One of those on each side.
On the front fork.
Or Danny actually just puts one big water bottle in one.
Oh,
so that's an option as well. Okay, this one's really unique.
Wow, look at this bag.
This is a tail bag, and it goes underneath your seat, and it straps to the
seat. Goes under the seat?
Yes.
Oh, sticks way out.
Sticks way out, almost like a banana, and it can become unwieldy if you fill it up too much. So my advice would be if you have one of these, just keep it small, but the great thing is the dry bag goes inside, and there's different designs.
Fancy.
And you can fill this up.
And it does stick way out.
It sticks way out, and it is pretty stable for the most part.
What do you usually put in that?
This, I usually put my sleeping bag, raincoat at the very bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Because hopefully I don't need it.
Yeah.
And it's a pain to take out. Stuff like a puffy jacket, things like that.
Yep.
And the thing with this is, unfortunately, a lot of women's bikes are smaller and they don't design the seat bags for them, and so they'll hit your back tire, which is not good. They've started to, this one I really like, this is a Revelate Cycles, I believe Lael Wilcox, which is, she's a great bike packer, you should look up. She uses this, and so just note that when you're looking at
if it's good enough for Layla, it's good enough for you.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, exactly.
That's a cool
I hear a lot of people really talking about that brand.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And I believe REI and your local bike shops carry. This is a well-known brand. Does everyone know about Vale straps?
Oh, sure yes. do.
Like okay. So we'll skip that.
Love them.
All different sizes. There's a huge one. There's baby ones that are only a few inches
those
long.
Those are good stocking never stuffers. Seen
the good stuff. When in doubt, really buy cool. another Vale strap.
Yeah, right? They're great stocking stuffers.
Yeah.
So this one, this is Oveja Negra. We just have a mixture of different brands. There's actually a local brand to Vermont called Class 4 Designs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
cool.
also one to look into. This is part of a lunch pack system for your handlebars.
Oh.
And so it's basically a taco shell, a hard taco shell.
Taco shell.
And then you would put your dry bag here.
Oh.
And there's actually, I forgot to bring it, but there's another one that goes and closes the taco shell, and that's called the lunchbox.
Oh, okay.
And you could even just use that if you're going on a short trip. But you can strap your Crocs to this. You could actually strap your Crocs to the back of the outside of the tail bag. There's a lot of options here. You could get a double-ended dry bag, so you can open it for both sides, like a Tootsie Roll.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of convenient.
So what do you usually put in that one?
In this one, I forget. Anything else.
Where do you put your sleeping bag?
Sleeping bag could go in the tail bag.
Oh, the tail bag.
Or this one.
Yep.
Clothes, I think typically nothing too heavy on your handlebars, because that's going to throw off your balance and control and ability to maneuver quickly. The thing with this is it can get really long, and so you have to just be careful of your new wide load.
Yeah.
But the handlebar bag is really convenient and fits any bike.
Yeah.
Devin, do you have a photo of you on a loaded bike that we could have to put on the website?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you the blog.
Julie's videoing some of this too, listeners, so you'll be able to check the
all these bags
the show notes
about.
And see all this cool stuff.
Yeah, and I have a blog for many of my trips with different variations of setup, and
we'll link to that.
We'll share that too. So I have a question. I mean, obviously you can't pack a lot. Like, how many shirts? Like, what do you basically pack?
Yeah, so the key is to bring enough, but not too much.
Yeah.
So, clothes-wise, this is my favorite piece of clothes.
Oh, yeah.
This is a wool dress.
Oh.
It has a hood.
You bring a dress on your
bike?
It's
a smart wool.
Bike pack?
Yes.
Of course she does.
So, I bring basically one set of riding clothes.
One set of riding clothes.
After I get into camp or the hut, a hotel or whatever, then you put on the dress, and then you kind of air everything out.
And
also good for when you need to do laundry, you have something to wear, if you need to go in town.
Can look
a little bit
cute.
Nice.
Can I feel that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But, you know, you want to bring clothes for rain, you want to, it depends on where you're going, if you need how many layers. I always bring my coffee, I always bring the raincoat, I always bring pants, but just one of everything. Except for socks. I usually bring one extra pair of socks.
Okay.
Mittens, hat, all of
it's
that.
It's minimalist.
But it is minimalist.
Yeah. So you need good stuff.
You do.
Stuff that, like, doesn't, no cotton.
Right.
Yeah. Cotton and
definitely
rotten.
No cotton.
Cotton.
You have all the phrases, Anna. Cotton is rotten.
That's a Boy Scout thing when you go hiking. Cotton is rotten. No cotton allowed.
So just a couple more bags to show. This one's called the gas tank, and it goes almost like if you're riding a motorcycle, where the gas tank typically is, right behind your handlebars, and good, really good for your cell phone, electronics, more snacks, your navigation, your safety spot device, things like that. And then I do have a duplicate one that goes under the seat.
Oh, okay.
In front of the seat bag.
Yep. Yep.
And then lastly, this is a frame bag.
Ooh,
and
look at that. That's
huge. These are great because it's in the center of the bike. It goes in the triangle of your frame.
Yep.
And you can put a lot of heavy stuff. So I typically put fuel for the stove. and anything heavy, tent poles, a lot of the medical kit, extra gear, because it keeps the center of gravity pretty standard. And this is waterproof. The tricky thing about frame bags is, again, for women's bikes, the triangle is often smaller, so you can't fit as much, but... And you might have to get a custom bag depending on your bike.
Yep.
But again, there's a lot of companies out there that make it. You could try making your own. Any of these, really. I bet, Anna, you could do a really good job at this.
I could knit something up.
Exactly. And my advice for a frame bag is get one with a roll top so that if you had a zipper, you often... stuff it and then the zipper is going to break.
Right. Yeah.
If you do have a zipper, get the waterproof zipper.
Okay, roll tops. Got it.
And then...
Good advice.
The last thing, which is not a bag, is I have these little... I think they're water shoes, but they're really tiny and they can roll up and just snap in. So it's just nice to have another pair of shoes.
So that's your... That's it.
That's it.
Your riding shoes.
Yeah, my riding shoes. Wow. And these are good if you have to cross a stream or something you don't want to get your riding shoes wet. And they're pretty light. And they're maybe $8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, these are great.
Yeah, these are great.
You know when we were in North Carolina and we had to cross all those streams and waterfalls and stuff?
Yeah.
How easy would this be just to keep in your pack?
Yeah.
And I use my mountain biking shoes for all bike packing. No clips. Because I want to order comfort.
Oh, just like the sneakers.
Just,
the mountain biking. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't clip in when you do these?
I don't, because there is often hike a bike or you need to go grocery shopping, or it's just more comfortable, in my opinion. And, and I'm not racing. I'm not going for time, so I don't need the speed.
I like that.
Interesting.
Too.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. That's some fun gear, things we don't normally get to see.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So how do you get your body ready for these trips? I mean, you've done some big trips.
Wait, how heavy is this stuff on your bike?
Oh, that's a great question. It's
funny you ask that, Janet. When I was building up that bike, I was meticulous. I weighed every single part.
Yeah.
I have a whole spreadsheet with a pie chart.
With a pie chart.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
I was
going
to say, Devin's an engineer. Yeah. Of course she has a spreadsheet.
I also have the cost per gram. So you can see if you're to spend money, you know, what's your biggest bang for your buck. But that surly, I mean, with the steel, oof. I think it was at least 60 pounds.
60 pounds? Your bike? With the stuff or just the bike?
No, with the stuff. Oh, 60 or 70 pounds.
That's still heavy.
That's a lot of bike, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bike. How'd you get up the hills?
That's why she's such a good, strong climber.
Yeah, exactly. It is funny when you do bike packing and then you take off all the stuff.
God, yeah.
You just feel like a broomstick.
Yeah.
And you just
fly. Like it's a broomstick. So fun. I love that analogy.
It's so fun. But with this setup, I mean, 60. Much lighter. I would estimate maybe 40 pounds if your bike is 25 pounds. I mean, it depends. Yeah. You can spend a lot of money and get lightweight stuff. But if you want to focus, I would focus on the tires and the wheels. You guys have talked about that in your past podcasts.
Yeah, those can be heavy.
Right, and the rolling resistance.
Yeah.
And just getting away from the panniers streamlines your profile as well.
Yeah.
So, in terms of getting your body ready, Anna, I don't have a great strategy. I don't, you know, plan out on a calendar, but the biggest thing is do a shakedown ride with your gear.
Because
to your point, it's going to feel a lot different.
Yeah.
So just go out and do a 5-10 mile ride on a rail trail just to figure out, is this even strapped on properly?
Yes, a good point.
Top heavy.
Shakedown ride.
So for any trip, do a shakedown ride.
Cool.
And, you know, just build up your general fitness level. But in general, I always kind of just get in shape along the ride and get used to it. It's hard to train for bike packing unless you just do it.
Right.
So do an overnighter. You don't have to go far, but just practice.
Yeah.
Practice. Cool. There's a lot. I know a lot of long distance hikers do the same thing. Like, I know some people, like, how did you train for the AT? They're like, I just went. And like, you know, the first few days you just go 5 miles and then you go 7.
Then they ditch half their stuff in their bag.
They get rid of all their stuff.
Right?
And then a couple weeks later they're doing 20 miles a day.
Right.
But
they just trained
on the trail.
On the trip.
So that's what you're saying.
And when I biked across the country, there was a requirement. We had to do a certain number of miles, but it was within, you know, 6 months or whatever leading up to the trip. it wasn't a ton, but just to build the base. And then you had to do maybe one or two bigger days just to build more mentally. I've done this many miles.
So that would be my advice. So what was your longest, ride?
So the longest ride I've ever done was on Bike and Build, which was the cross-country trip. It was actually my birthday. It was 116 miles. But it was flat, and I think we had a tailwind. So it's not really the distance that dictates the day.
So how many days were you out on that ride?
That was 75 days.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah. That's all summer.
Yeah, that was a whole summer. Yeah. And that's the hardest part.
How many total miles?
That was 4,000 miles or so.
Yeah, that's a lot of miles, too.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But again, that was supported. So we didn't we each had a bin, and that was all you could bring.
Yeah, cool.
And we would stay often at churches or community centers, and the community would donate food. And that was
this usually
incredible.
Younger?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That one, there is an age requirement. I think you have to be 30 or less.
Yeah.
It's typically when you graduate college, you trip and you build houses along the way with Habitat for Humanity.
I would love to have done that.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's so cool. But I wish it was done by bike. I traveled and I did Habitat for Humanity.
And
we actually went out to Canada.
Oh,
fun. It was Michigan and in that area. It was great.
Oh,
it was in high school.
Oh, wow.
I slept in churches and everything.
Cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
But it would have been way cooler on a bike.
Yeah, it would have been way cooler on a bike. Yeah.
Everything's cooler on a bike. Yeah.
Oh, obviously.
That's so great.
Okay. Cool. What about your diet?
So, food is really important because you're just
burning.
Moving all the time. And similar to when, Gretchen was talking about her event in Canada on the podcast a few episodes ago, every day you're kind of getting ready for the next day, and your body starts to learn, I'm not just fueling for today. I know you're going to keep going. And so your metabolism changes. And so always having breakfast, always having a big lunch, in my opinion, helps. I have a trick of taking a nap at lunches just to kind of reset.
I like that.
Bringing dried food. My favorite is just dried stuffing and dried mashed potatoes, like a little Thanksgiving on the trail.
Wow.
You can get a lot of dehydrated vegetables or dehydrate them yourself to add to meals, like ramen and peanut butter on a wrap is kind of one of our go-tos as well. But
you definitely
need a lot of food.
You do ramen? You cook it?
You cook the ramen, take out the liquid, and put the ramen in a wrap, add peanut butter, some dried vegetables, roll it up.
That's new to me.
Yeah. It gets that salt.
Does this have a name?
Oh.
No.
The Devon special?
Yes.
Devon ramen special.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
The Devon BP.
That was developed on the Great Divide. Because you want to change it up. You don't want to just keep eating the same things over and over. Yeah.
So peanut butter's big.
Yeah,
sure.
Yes. Any electrolyte, hydration,
typical
Clif Bars is always a good buffer. Yeah. I do a lot of beef jerky.
Yeah. You can eat whatever you want. Sounds like a fun trip.
And then when you're done, this is the best part. When you're done, your body thinks you're going to keep going for another week. So, for another week, you're still really hungry and you can just eat whatever. That's great.
Okay. I'm more interested now.
This sounded like more and more fun.
Yeah, pig out bike packing.
All right, you talked a little bit about the route planning and choosing the route so that you know what bike to bring and clothes and all that. And I have this vision of, I've mentioned this to you before, I can only imagine sitting in front of the fire with the maps on the coffee table and a big glass of wine and planning out sort of day to day. Is this reality or is this just me dreaming?
No, this is reality. Okay. We'll just sit on the couch looking at bikepacking.com, drawing routes on MapOut, which is an app that we use.
MapOut. Okay.
Yes. And it's great. You can download GPX files to it, but you can also kind of explore it. It goes into 3D mode. And so, just pouring over maps and kind of dreaming, and it's totally part of the fun. And sometimes it's just as much fun thinking about it and then reflecting on it afterwards, too, as the actual trip itself.
Hmm.
And so I know why I do that for hiking, and I have, my biggest backpacking hikes have been 2 nights. So I can only imagine how fun it is for, I'm going for 2 weeks in Iceland or whatever.
75 days.
Right.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. And the Iceland, going back to Iceland, they have an awesome map. Because I also do recommend, bringing your traditional digital navigation device, but having map as a backup, or a like book. When we did the Great Divide, we had this book with a cheat sheet in there.
Yeah.
But the Iceland bike packing map is amazing, and it has, going back to pie charts, I'm a data nerd, so in all the towns, it has a pie chart color-coded with, does it have a hot spring? Does it have fresh water? Does it have camping? Does it have lodging? Does it have food? And that's how we planned our route. Like, we knew if we could get here.
Oh, yeah.
Then we have all these things.
I get this reward. And there's the, is it the American Cycling Association? I forget exactly their acronym, but they have a ton of great maps that are just fun to kind of peruse over, and they often have little nuggets about the places you go, so when you're you know, done with your ride, you're like, oh, you know, that's what that was, and this is the history. So that's kind of part of the fun as well, learning about the place and the people.
So the group, the route planning really is
don't like tell real. Doug, but I'm gonna get him these two books.
No, you can borrow these. Okay. We have so many. We get them in the mail every quarter.
Oh, I can borrow them.
Yeah, you can all borrow one.
Wow.
Trade.
Okay, I'm getting pretty. I get excited about all the stuff. Last time I got excited about the racing. I know. I get excited about this.
Yeah.
I like to do stuff. Can you tell?
Janet does things.
Yeah, and Doug's going to retire in February. We'll have time.
Yeah.
I totally see you doing this, Janet.
I do too.
Yeah.
And Doug.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's just your day ride, but then you just do it multiple days in a row.
Right. Which you guys do anyways.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah. That's up my alley.
Absolutely,
this stuff.
It is.
I think so. Both of us.
With all your training, you didn't even know that's what you were training for.
I know.
You're training for this big bike packing trip with Doug when he retires.
Yep.
Awesome. Devin, what do you love most about a bike packing trip?
I would go back to that kind of meditative state. You're just pedaling, and it's just so simple, and you appreciate all the little things. You know, it rains and you're cold, and then there was an example when we were up in Stowe on the Green Mountain Gravel Growler. We were freezing, and then we went into this pizza shop, and then people saw us, and they're like, oh, you should just, you know, we have this place up on the mountain. You should just stay there. Here's the combination.
Oh, my God.
And so the generosity, I mean, I have so many stories where people have done this. There was a time, actually in Iceland, which, Julie, you should, if you do a trip, go to Iceland because it's a one circle. It's a loop.
Do we not hear about me getting lost in the
That's right, getting lost
in the
mountain. No, but one-lot pony.
But a five-mile loop, she got lost in a circle.
Well, it's only Iceland. I mean, it's an island. How lost can she get?
And there's buses that circulate, so if you do need to, you know, change plans, there's fresh water, there's the hot springs, the trickiest part about Iceland, however, was the wind.
Oh, God.
But this was a trip with my brother, and we just gave up because we were, I've told you this story, Janet, we were going downhill, and you go backwards because of the wind, or you're going,
that's some serious wind.
It's some serious wind, and it did blow me off the bike one day, but
ooh, that is serious wind.
There was one day where we just said, this is impossible, and we started, you know, raising our hands, and a van went by, and they pulled over. We put our bikes in the back, get in, and they're like, hi, by the way, we're the Icelandic soccer team. And we're like, oh my God, this is amazing. So just another example of generosity. On the Great Divide, too, there's this famous couple that has basically opened up their land, and they've built all these cabins only for bikers.
Oh, wow.
Because they knew they were on this route. They live in the middle of nowhere. They have llamas that they heal, and then they host bikers, and they just go to Costco, and they have, you know, freezers full of food. They have, you know, just any. They have M&Ms coming out of all the cabins, and they're only, they say, did you hear about the pricing structure? And we're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And they're like, all you have to do is pay it forward.
Oh,
and so
there's just
that, that's another one of my favorite parts is the community and also the camaraderie along the way. The people that you meet that are doing the same route.
Yeah.
You know, on our honeymoon, we happened to be paired up with these four emergency room nurses.
Oh,
and
I love it.
Every night we would just kind of debrief on the day, and you just build this bond with people because you're going, I mean, it's hard work, but it's so rewarding, and to share those stories together is awesome.
What a life you're creating.
Love it.
Awesome.
Now, what's your least favorite part of a bike packing trip?
Probably dealing with weather.
The cold. And that's what I was thinking. And I got to go in the summer.
Yeah. And sometimes you just can't find a place, a great place to stay. And you just land in this wherever you are and you're just out of energy. And there was a time on the Great Divide and we ended up, it was like some town right off the highway. And it was either you camp in a, like a truck stop kind of. And we said no. And so we went to this little town park. Definitely not supposed to camp there. Oh, and in the middle of the night at 2 a.m., the sprinklers went off. And we're like, oh no. So, I mean, it's a good story after the fact. Yeah, but, you know, there's those things you can't control. But they do make a good story afterwards.
Right,
so.
Sure. Right.
The pluses balance out the negatives, for sure.
And you get stronger.
Yeah. What doesn't kill you, right?
Yeah. You get stronger.
Do you have other story? I mean, you've told us some really good stories so far this episode. Although I like the story of your cell phone being stolen.
Oh my gosh. That was awful. That was after crazy. Our trip. Okay. After our cat got lost and found on our honeymoon, and then somehow I must have been taking a nap in a hammock, or I got pickpocketed. I don't know what happened.
Where was this?
This was in Moab, actually.
Oh.
And whoever stole it forgot to turn off Find My Friend, and
find
my phone.
Yeah,
and we tracked it down. And Danny was like, "I'm the new husband. I need to go find this one." And he starts running. Yeah. And we call the police, and we find it. Funny. And that was funny.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So somebody just grabbed it out of your.
I don't know. Whatever. Apparently.
And you got it back.
And we got it back.
Yeah. And my wallet. From a sketchy part of town.
That's right. And my wallet was attached to it, so I had everything.
Did you get everything back?
Everything. They didn't even take the cash that was in the wallet.
Well, they weren't smart enough to turn off.
Yeah. No. This was their first phone stealing situation, so I lucked out that way.
Yeah.
But other stories, I'm going to go back to Iceland again. So hot dogs are a big... delicacy there, and they put the toppings under the hot dog.
I like that idea.
It's really good. And I kept getting more hot dogs at this. I would have one. Oh, I want another, and I want another.
See,
and then my credit card stopped working, and I get an email from the credit card company. Your credit card has been stolen. They thought I had been hacked, and I'm like, no, I'm just really hungry.
Hot dogs.
Yeah, so that's another funny story.
That's great.
That's funny.
I have a hard time picturing Devin eating hot dogs.
Same, I love
especially
it.
Especially more than one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, they're great. They're great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Cool. So, you've obviously inspired some of us in this room, especially.
I'm already taking the books.
Yeah, Janet's like making a list. I'm going to go here. So, what tips do you have for those of us who might be going out for the first time?
Yeah. So, just go and just do a short trip in your neighborhood, in your local area. Maybe it's a trail system you've already gone to, but just turn it into an overnight. And it could be an out and back. Or you could park a car at one end just practice that idea.
Yep.
And once you do it once, a one-night trip is really not that much different from a one-week trip. You're bringing mostly the same stuff.
It's
just the amount of food and water, but everything else is kind of the same. So just go ride. The other thing I would say, just be prepared. So on one of the Glow episodes early on, you guys talked about the med kit, the spare parts. Do all of that. And then there's some nuanced things you need to bring that you wouldn't bring on a day ride. So think about risk and what could potentially go wrong. So we always bring spare spokes. You can even put them in the seat post easily hide them. Bring spare quick links. Bring spare brake pads, spare cables, spare derailleur hangers, the things that you normally wouldn't bring. And they're small, so they don't take up a lot of room, but just to have that peace of mind.
Yeah.
Because you're not always going to be near a bike shop. And then in terms of safety, bringing the water filter, your extra batteries or chargers or the dynamo hub if you want to get fancy. I will do a shout out to Analog Cycles in Pulteney, Vermont. They're a bike shop specific to bike packing.
Oh,
yes. It is like a candy store.
You must love it.
I love it. We just go.
Isn't that female owned?
It's female owned. Candace is great.
Candace is amazing.
Yeah, she's an awesome bike mechanic and she gets all these anodized parts. So if you want to make your bike look really fun, go there. And they have really good quality stuff. Lots of bike bags. and just, you know, nuanced bike packing gear. So,
okay,
and they also have, they do a lot of online
shopping. Okay, is that shopping. N plus one bike?
Yeah, and plus one gear.
Although it doesn't sound like you need a new bike. Oh, right, it sounds like you need the gear to put on the bike you already have.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm hearing anyway.
Yes, exactly. And just on the safety topic again, bring your in-reach and at least tell someone your route. Where someone knows exactly where you're going. And
I'm not sure that's going to help for me.
Julie just needs to make sure you have an active GPS so we can find you, that you can drop a pin. Like, this is where I am. Can someone come find me, please?
Yeah, I've been going in circles forever. I've passed that tree five times.
What town are you in? I don't know. What state are you in? I'm not sure.
Just get better. Oh my gosh.
Here's my pin.
Yeah.
Too funny.
The adventure bike packing trip.
We'll have
that's
one
exactly
of those.
What it would be.
Yep. I'm not sure I'm going to let Julie do this.
No. Oh, well. So I heard
supported
would be good.
Yeah.
I heard, though, have you heard there's a Lebanon, New Hampshire bike packing route?
No.
Yes. Where? I read it. I don't know these things, but I read it on one of the Upper Valley things that there is a local route that they've been putting together.
Oh, my gosh. Think about the rail trail, though. I mean, it goes like 50 miles now.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
So maybe it's even just...
Maybe part of that. I'll find out. But I definitely read something about this. So I was like, I had no idea.
And you can stop at Mickey's and you can stop for ice cream.
Yep.
Yeah. Canaan. And so that's another part of the tips. Just make it fun and stop at things that you normally wouldn't stop at.
Yep.
And then other tips, you know, get inspiration from other folks that have done this. You can read my blogs, but also... I mentioned Lael Wilcox. She has the record. She races bike packing. She has the record for bike packing across the country, but she also hosts women-only bike packing trips around the world to inspire more women. She also does a young girls trip in Alaska every year to just get folks out on bikes that normally wouldn't. And love so, it. You know, she's got a lot of footage, documentaries out there that are just really inspiring to watch. So do that. And then gear. Going back to the gear, if you only got one piece of bike packing specific gear, I would say that handlebar bag.
Yeah.
Because you could just fit everything in it and put on any bike.
So that would be tier
one. If you got another one, I would say the frame bag, just because you could put heavy stuff in there. And then three would be your tail bag.
Okay.
But again, you don't have to get all
so
this
typically
stuff.
You don't use a backpack.
Never.
Okay.
Yeah, just on my first trip, and that was not comfortable.
Okay,
yeah.
It's not comfortable.
Yeah, fanny pack's okay.
Yeah.
Fanny pack's good, but the backpack just gets in the way.
Okay.
Gave me bruises. And,
Yeah.
And then the last piece of advice I would say is host a bike packer if they're coming through your town. Go on warmshowers.org, and you learn so much. I've learned MapOut. That app is how I found out about that, through hosting.
Oh.
And you just... Then you have other folks to stumble upon when you're in their neck of the woods. So it's just a great community.
Networking. That's a really good tip, Devin. That's a really, really good idea. We should all do that. Because even if we're not actively doing it, we can still sign up and host people.
Exactly. And a warm shower goes a long way. Oh, it's those simple things.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to have a glow backpack trip next summer.
Led by Devin.
There's a route in the White Mountains that was created by Daniela Blanca, who lives in Vermont. And I haven't done it yet. It's 60 miles, so I could do it 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy to guide that.
Is it what type of single track, roads, gravel?
Gravel. And some single track and some pavement. So a mixed of everything. So you could use whatever bike.
Yeah. Sounds like fun.
Very cool.
Yep.
Well, Devin, we really appreciate inspiring us and all of our listeners. Because I think even this is something that every time I hear about your trips and I read your blog, I'm like, oh, she's so cool. That's just so crazy. And I never think of it as anything I'd want. Like, that's not really me. But after listening to this and seeing some of the pictures in your magazine here, it's like, well, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a small one.
Yeah. Exactly.
You can make it as glitzy or, you know, rugged as you want.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love the fact of just using your own bike and, you know, not that much extra equipment, it's like, okay, this could be doable.
The glamping version of bike packing.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Can be done.
Can we make up a word?
I know. I was trying to. It's not coming to me right now.
Glow packing.
Glow packing.
Good job.
Yes.
We're going glow packing. Glow packing. That's great. There must be singing involved.
Yeah. Oh, if Devin's along, there's always singing involved. Yeah. I can make it up any hill when I got Devin with me and she sings me up the hill.
Yeah, and you can bring your skis on. I didn't mention that, but we strapped our skis onto our bike. That wasn't even an overnight, but I still call it bike packing. And then we biked to the ski, you know, in that one part of the season where you can bike and ski at the same time.
Yeah. Oh,
you're so cool.
It doesn't have to be an overnight.
How did you attach your skis to your bike?
Voilet straps.
Voilet straps do everything.
Okay. We forgot to mention that on our last episode. So add that to your gift-giving.
Yeah.
Voilet straps. Okay. Cool. Well, this week, Janet, shout out.
My shout out is to VIMBA, which is vmba.org. So,
and what does VIMBA stand for?
Vermont Mountain Biking Association.
That's right.
But what's nice, if you go to their website, you can go on the events calendar and see everything they have. Like right now, they don't have a whole lot because it's kind of the swing season, but you can see some meetings. But I went back and there were a lot of like rides on there. So if you want to meet people and do different areas and ride there, you can find out all these rides that are in the different areas in Vermont. So it's pretty cool.
They're great.
They do say you have to sign a waiver if you do the rides, so make sure you do that. Join VIMBA in your local chapter. Here we typically do UVMBA, Upper Valley Mountain Biking Association, and add-ons like
ATA, Woodstock.
Yep.
Yeah, those are kind of our local add-ons.
Yep. And then the to join it, the individual is $60, well worth it, and the family for 2 to 4 is $120. But I think it's, you know, all the trails are free, so like, come on, just pay this and it helps.
Yes.
Plus, you get this this card of coupons and free stuff, including downhill skiing midweek and downhill mountain biking. So it really, if you go to like Killington and Sugarbush and Burke, is paid for.
Right.
So if you just do two or three of the downhill, and then if you ski, and then you also get 20% off this, 10% off that, you know, at restaurants, bike shops, all sorts of good deals as long as you're a VIMBA member.
Yeah. Right. So I went to the calendar and I subscribed, so now I can see everything in my own Google Calendar, or if you have a different type, you can do that too.
Clever.
So, yeah, that's really nice, which you need to do for Glow.
Yeah.
Where? Everywhere in Vermont. I mean, it's all the different trail systems and abilities. When you look on the calendar, they'll say like intermediate ride, beginner ride, advanced, so you'll know which type of ride it is. Let's see what else. And as I was saying, now there's not a lot going on, but there's some films. Some of the bike chapters are doing films.
They just had one. They just had one last week.
Has to look like fun.
Yeah. It was really bad. They had like 300 people.
I was impressed.
Yeah.
In Burlington.
And did you notice if Uber Wintern was on the calendar? Because that's something that's coming up.
Yes, I didn't go that far forward.
Oh, okay.
But speaking of Uber Winter, you should sign up
and
get your ticket.
January 21st.
Oh, that's yes.
So by the time this episode airs, it'll be right around the corner. So
and it sells out.
It sells out
only 250,
year.
But they said you have a week before you can
cancel too.
Right.
You can get a refund. Because as we all know, winter biking, which we'll talk about in another episode, it's really weather dependent and temperature.
But it's still a good cause.
This festival is fantastic.
It's fun anyways.
Festival. It's super fun. And even if it's crappy conditions, I think you'd still have a great time.
Yeah, we can Julie Clemens said
the little mittens, the beer mittens.
Yeah.
The glow beer mittens.
I'll work on more glow beer mittens for that one.
God, to hold the beer. A mitten to hold the beer.
That's right. Working on my prototype.
Yeah, so everybody I think should join VIMBA. I think it's really important to support your trail systems, but they have a lot of other things to you can find out about. So.
Yeah, and most of your membership does go back to the local
chapter.
To your local chapter.
Yeah.
So that's how they buy the wood to build the bridges and the tools that they need and the legal fees for all this stuff with trail maintenance and all that stuff. So please, please, please really consider becoming
a member of your local organization. It's once you get your bike, you don't pay to go to most of these trail systems. It's free, but they do need maintenance, so support them.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you're not in Vermont, if you're in New England, there's Nemba, and I'm not sure about other parts of the country, but I'm sure you all
Everyone
have
a
local
chapter.
Trail association. Yep. And, you know, we also want you to participate by going out and helping on trail days and volunteering yep. your time and efforts and talents. But
and you meet people when you do trail days. You buy your membership. Them,
which yeah. is nice. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Definitely. Well, cool.
Yeah,
well, I
amazing.
Guess that about
Thank
wraps
you, Devin.
Up.
Thanks
yeah,
for
thanks,
having Devin. That was so fun.
That was so amazing. Interesting. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learned a lot.
You're amazing.
Yeah. Yes, you are. We're so lucky to have you.
Yeah, we're yeah. so
multi-talented.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, if we don't see you on the trail soon, we hope to see you back here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Kick stands up. Hoo-dee-hoo!